all the unique characters.
I do let them bang. Yeah, I'm a legend, man. I'm building my legs.
All the stories and perspectives featured weekly.
I wasn't fully committed to that choke, and I kind of sunk into it, started squeezing tighter, and I kind of heard him gurgle a little bit. I was like, oh.
And all the combat sports you could ask for in the best state in the U.S.
Like I said, Ohio versus the world. It's going to happen for sure. Watch out.
It'll be cool, man. I'm not worried about it. I'm going to show them why the Ohio MMA scene is, in my opinion, one of the best MMA scenes in the country.
This is Forged in
OHIO.
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 Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 72 of Forged in Ohio. My name is Jake Murren, and I'm the host of the podcast. I'm truly excited for today's episode, as the trend of welcoming some more experienced fighters onto the show continues. It's long overdue for me to welcome this Victory MMA product onto the show. He finished his career at Cage Thunder 25 with a 5-3 record, with three wins coming inside the distance. Joining me now is Brandon Billitzer. Thanks for coming on the show, Brandon, and welcome on in to Forge in Ohio, man.
Oh, thanks for having me. Thanks for what you do for local MMA. It's a pleasure to finally be on.
Of course, man. I love what I do in welcoming all these fighters from all different parts of Ohio onto the show. We'll get to your fights and the retirement here soon, but I want to talk about your story first. Your amateur debut was 5 years ago, but what encouraged you to actually get into MMA?
So I grew up wrestling, and then my brother, he's actually a black belt in Taekwondo. So I've always been around different martial arts, started watching the UFC pretty early on, always been involved in sports and competing. And me being a smaller guy, I never really had a future in many other sports. So I was fairly successful in my wrestling career and started mixing everything in once I graduated high school and found Victory when I was about 19.
So when did that transition happen for you with that wrestling base, that foundation, that you actually had that itch that maybe you want to try competing inside of a cage in mixed martial arts?
So I actually stopped wrestling right as I got into high school. I kind of got burnt out of, you know, doing the tournaments and a lot of, you know, the off-season extra stuff. And that was kind of when I decided I wanted to do it. I kind of had to wait until I had my own money. So once I graduated high school, I did Taekwondo with my brother for a little bit, and then did that for about a year, and then found Victory and started implementing, you know, mainly boxing and jiu-jitsu is what they focus on. We got a lot of really good wrestlers at that camp, too.
Yeah, so I believe you're as much of a fan of mixed martial arts as you are a fighter yourself. Did you look up to anyone in the sport growing up or when you were wrestling that you kind of just admired watching?
The first person I gravitated towards was Anderson Silva. I think a lot of people can kind of resonate with that, at least in my age group. But yeah, him just always looking for finishes, not really fighting like any other fighter of his generation. And I think really ushered in that era of mixed martial arts.
So you mentioned how you first came across Victory MMA when you were 19 years old, but what has it been like to see that gym grow year after year since you've been there for so long?
I mean, it's amazing. Not only them getting a new building, better equipment, you know, I started there when they were on 30th Street, but still the same core guys, you know, from the very first day I was there, Drew was in there, and then Coach Terry as well. And they've always been, you know, very supportive of all the young fighters and, you know, letting you be you. I know, you know, a lot of the guys kind of have a wrestling background now, but, you know, I think it was more known as a striking gym. When I first came in there, you had Nate Davies and Seth Schaefer that were more strikers predominantly, got their work done on the feet. So just them accepting who you are kind of as your base and then just giving you the tools and the fundamentals to grow from there.
So when you walked through those Victory MMA doors for the first time, did you have the mindset of, yeah, I'm going here to train because I want to fight, or just because you wanted to train mixed martial arts and get into the sport a little bit?
I knew I was going to compete, and I knew I had a lot of, you know, it was almost ignorance as bliss. I thought I was, you know, a little ahead of the curve when I started being 19 and just, you know, as much as I had watched this sport and studied it, I thought I kind of had a leg up on a lot of the people that would have been competing. And then once you get in there and, you know, you work with some really tough guys, it humbles you a little bit. So I had to take a step back in terms of my trajectory. But, you know, first couple of sparring sessions I had, Terry knew that, you know, I was going to be a pretty good competitor. And, you know, we got my debut penciled in, I think, within a year of me walking through those doors.
Were people around you, friends and family, supportive at first when you made that decision to go to Victory MMA and then actually wanting to fight?
Definitely friends. They kind of knew it was something that I'd want to do for a long time. And I got quite a few of them into the sport. And once they kind of understood what it was, they thought I'd be a good fit for it. But usually when I meet, you know, especially family, they just couldn't believe it. They're like, oh, you're such a, you know, soft-spoken, nice guy. I can't imagine you getting there in a cage. But, you know, once they went to the first event, and, you know, Cage Thunder's always put on really good shows, and I think they were surprised, pleasantly surprised at just how well everything has ran.
Yeah, the debut for you came in 2019 at Cage Thunder 9. What do you remember most from that amateur debut and making that walk for the first time?
It was, I've always been pretty good with nerves and things of that nature, so I don't remember being very nervous. I remember quite the opposite. I was supposed to be the last fight right before the first intermission, and somebody got injured. They had to bring the EMT in, and so they put the intermission right before my fight. So I'm kind of standing in the tunnel, and I remember having an argument with Drew about Denny's over Waffle House. And he just couldn't believe that I was talking about something so benign right before my first fight.
So, yeah, that's crazy. You have that conversation with your coach before you fight. Is that how you like to approach the fight game? Not that way you don't get stressed and you're not worried about what may or may not happen in the cage. Instead, you're just having this random conversation minutes before you make the walk.
Yeah, I think, you know, any nerves that I would feel like during fight day would come like earlier in the day, kind of like during weigh-ins. I was very uncomfortable doing the interviews at the start, and obviously, you know, with as long as I've been doing it, and, you know, me doing that with the commentary too, I'm a lot more comfortable with that aspect of it. But yeah, I just, the more it got closer to the fight, the more I just was confident in my skills and just knew all the hard work was done. And so I just actually felt more comfortable as I got closer to the fight.
So you won that debut via knockout in the very first round. When you had that type of success in your first fight, were you immediately hooked to the fight game and just wanted to get right back in there and keep going on this journey?
Absolutely. I had a fight that was actually canceled a couple months before that. So I was just chomping at the bit to compete. And then once I finally got the first one out of the way, I jumped on the very next Cage Thunder card. Actually, I think signed my contract while I was on vacation. I took it up at 145 because I couldn't make the wait in time. But yeah, I knew I wanted to compete again right away, and rattled off that fight in November, and then jumped into my third fight, I think, 2 months after that. So I wanted to stay active.
Yeah, so I saw that the amateur debut was canceled, and I actually saw a very ancient post on Facebook. It said your opponent just never even showed up to weigh-ins. How frustrating of an experience was that for you, looking to make your debut and, like you said, itching to get in there?
Yeah, it was frustrating. You know, you cut the weight, you make the weight, and you know, and then it's my first event, so I'm having to sell tickets, try to refund tickets, and, you know, tell people not to come. And so it's just a very confusing time, and, you know, working through all that stuff. It's not the type of stuff that you want to be doing on that day. So it's definitely frustrating, but, you know, I told Scott, I said, just make sure you get somebody who's got a record. I wanted somebody that had fought before, so I knew that they were used to making that walk and would be willing to do it again.
Talking with Brandon Billiter here on Forged in Ohio. Let's actually make the jump to your last fight at Cage Thunder 25, where you fought last. At 26 years old, I know that was your retirement fight, I believe. Why did you decide to retire after the loss?
So I kind of felt, you know, not necessarily burned out, like I said earlier about my wrestling career, but it takes a lot out of you, you know, not just physically, but mentally. To get up for these fights, training camps, you know, you go and do them really excited, and you kind of, you know, refuel that flame, and then it starts to die out. And for me, my last 2-3 fights, even it just wasn't the same, and I knew I had more to offer to different aspects of my life. Looking forward to saving my brain cells and hopefully going back to school. And, you know, I really enjoy the commentary, and, you know, I'd like to pursue a career in that. So just looking out for my, you know, my physical health, my mental health. And, you know, I was proud of the body of work that I put at that point. And I didn't think there was a whole lot, you know, going into that fight. I knew that if I won, I would achieve something that I was working hard for a long time, and that, you know, amateur title. And I lost in there, I probably wouldn't have another chance at it. So I kind of went in there knowing that that would be the last one.
Yeah, so going into it, you even knew that it would be your last time competing, but it sounds like that flame was dwindling, as you said, going into that fight, or even the previous two fights for you. When did the decision actually click for you that, hey, this Cage Thunder 25 card in December at the Canton Civic Center, yeah, that might be the last one?
So once they announced that card, I was still all in. I think when I found out about that one, it was going into my first title fight, and I really had a goal in mind to make my pro debut on that card. And then, you know, I had the first setback in the first title fight. And that's when I kind of started thinking about, you know, putting a wrap to this and maybe not competing, you know, putting everything into this, because that's, you know, that's what it takes. So after the second loss, I was just in camp helping Luke. And a week before the fight, Denzel's opponent pulled out, and I'm like, well, I can make 45. You know, I don't have anything to lose, and if I win, I'll have one more chance at that title. So, you know, I told Drew the same thing, because he doesn't like when people take short notice fights. And he said, well, if that's what you're looking at, then you don't have anything to lose. And he let me take that fight. I got a win. It put me back into title contention. And so I committed myself to that last camp, had a good camp, and just happened to get caught with an overhand right.
Is it difficult mentally when you're going through those last two, three fights of your career and you know that flame is dwindling, your passion for the sport, at least competing in it anyway, was starting to go away? I know you're still committed to these fight camps and getting in there in the best shape of your life, but is it hard mentally to have to go through that while actually trying to get in there and pick up wins in your career?
Yeah, I think, you know, anyone that's gone through a fight camp knows the highs and lows mentally, that, you know, not just the cut and weight, but just how much you put into it. And, you know, when the fights got closer, obviously you still had confidence, but, you know, I just getting in there and, you know, not being able to, you know, almost flip the switch of like, I gotta, you know, it's kill or be killed. And I gotta hurt this guy. He's, you know, he wants everything I have. You know, that was the hardest part of flipping that switch, you know, when it came fight time. You know, the camps were good. I felt like I was in good physical shape, but the mental aspect was harder and harder to do there towards the end.
At Cage Thunder 25, of course, you train out of Victory MMA in Canton. What was it like competing at the Canton Civic Center?
I mean, it was everything that I would have hoped for. I mean, it was such a big show, and to do it with Luke, who has been my main training partner for the better part of a year, having him defend his belt with Devin defend his belt on that card as well. Obviously would have, you know, liked better results, but, you know, had a lot of, probably the most fans I'd had personally since my debut. So a lot of eyes, and then just the local talent and everything that it brought. Cage Thunder put on a really good show, and it was, you know, I was proud to be a part of that, especially at the end of my last one.
I know we just talked about like the stress and anxiety that goes in the fight game and how you do a pretty good job of blocking those things out. Your amateur debut, you're having a conversation about fast food restaurants before making the walk to the cage. But for your retirement fight, what were the emotions like prior to that, being that it was at the Canton Civic Center, it was for an amateur title, and then in the back of your mind, it was your last fight as well?
Yeah, I think I let that get to me a little bit more than I thought it would going in. You know, I was feeling more nerves than I had in any other fight, you know, making the walk down that big ramp and kind of seeing the bigger crowd. And it took me a little bit longer to get into the fight. I remember, you know, I didn't have a lot of success, not a lot of volume in that fight, but I remember landing a calf kick, and I started to kind of feel myself getting into the rhythm of the fight. And then, you know, came up short on a right hand, and that was when I got caught throwing a kick afterwards. So, you know, nerves were a little bit different, but, you know, when you're in there, you know, I saw some success, and then I, you know, that for me was me working myself into the fight.
the result at Cage Thunder 25 itself, does it bother you that you finished your career that way with a loss?
No, like I said, going in, I knew, you know, either way that it was going to be it. So I was well aware. Obviously, having losses before, I wasn't, you know, oblivious to that being the result. And, you know, the result actually made it a little bit easier. You know, not really wanting to see friends and family after that, and having them see that happen to me was pretty tough. So it actually made it a little bit easier.
It's another difficult question to ask, but you weren't able to win the Cage Thunder Bantamweight Championship in your career. Is that something that's going to stick with you, or do you not really think about that?
I think that, you know, some days I'll think about it. You know, I might kick myself for, you know, coming up short, especially, you know, those first two. I felt like, you know, I kind of had those fights, and, you know, people will come up to me at those Cage Thunder events, and, you know, some people still think I won that fight against Branson. It was a really close decision, but no, I don't. It's not something that's going to haunt me. Like I said, I'm proud of the body of work. I know I had some fun fights. I knew I had a very tough strength of schedule, so, you know, I was just happy to go out there and compete. I won more than I lost, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, is it easy to come to terms with the decision to retire when you are proud of your body of work with what you've done in your career and maybe not have those regrets that so many other mixed martial artists do when they decide to retire?
Yeah, I think for a lot of people it goes the other way. I think they, you know, they're chasing it a little too long, and then, you know, whether, you know, they wear out a lot of themselves, you know, trying to find that, and they never do, or, you know, they lose part of themselves mentally or physically because, you know, they can't let this game go. So, so I'm a little bit at peace knowing that, you know, I'm still intact, and, you know, I'm proud of what I did.
I know it's only been a few months, but since the loss in December, how has life changed for you knowing that you are retired and aren't necessarily looking for another fight out there?
It was a bit of an adjustment. It was more of a adjustment than I thought that, you know, for the last 5 years, I've just been the fight guy in my circle, you know, people constantly coming up to me and, you know, I wouldn't even usually get a, how are you? It's, hey, when's the next fight? How's training going? So, you know, I was kind of happy to be Brandon the person again and not, you know, just Brandon the fighter. But when you put so much time into something like this, you know, it does kind of become your identity. And so it was a little bit tough, you know, finding different things to do and keep myself busy and keep my mind off of it because, you know, it was such a big part of it.
Do you ever imagine a scenario where you're going to miss Brandon the fighter or have that flame that was dwindling in your last three fights come back and spark back up a little bit?
It does kind of spark up a little bit when, you know, starting training. I went and sparred with some of the guys right before Cage Thunder 27 just to see how everyone was looking. That was the first time I put the gloves on since December. And, you know, obviously I always enjoy sparring. I always enjoyed, you know, getting better and giving my knowledge to some of the guys in the gym. But I take a lot of pride and credit in that too. So, you know, even if it's, you know, not me going out there and getting those wins, you know, I kind of can live vicariously through these younger guys in the gym that are coming up and, you know, listening to my advice and get to have good rounds with them and watch them grow.
For you, when were you at your best in your career? I know our mutual friend Alex Henry glowingly talked about how he saw improvement in your game each and every single fight. So when were you at your best?
I think it was that first title fight. I was undefeated at the time, and, you know, I kind of thought, you know, I really couldn't be beat, you know. So going into that fight, I had heard that, you know, I'd saw his knockouts in his resume and knew he had pro fights lined up and stuff like that. You know, it didn't bother me none. I went in there. We had a good game plan. And, you know, we had a close round one, run round two, and then kind of ran out of gas. And, you know, I put a lot of output out in that fight. But, you know, I watched that fight back and, you know, I see that as the best version of myself, both mentally and physically.
With that being the best version of yourself, even though it didn't go your way, and of all your eight fights, does one of them stick out as your favorite, whether it was the performance or the method of victory? Does one of them stick out?
I think that my last win that I had will probably, you know, stick out to me in terms of, you know, I didn't have a camp for that one. We were focused on Luke. And so, you know, I think that kind of helped me mentally as well. I didn't have the ups and downs of a camp. I was there for Luke, and then the opportunity presented itself. So I went in there more clear-headed than I had probably since, you know, my fights before COVID. You know, I kind of went out there and just let it all hang out. And I think the performance kind of showed that.
I know it's a cliche question to ask, but what do you want to be remembered for when it comes to what you were able to do in the cage and when it just comes to your fighting career as a whole?
That I was a guy that, you know, was a fun fighter to watch. I know, you know, there's some guys that, you know, they just want to win, and, you know, they're tactically, they'll just, you know, they're not the most exciting fighters to watch. I think I put out, you know, of my eight fights, I think there were quite a few that were, you know, standouts in terms of showing high skill, high fight IQ. You know, I think I kind of built a reputation on that and, you know, gained a lot of respect from my peers. So I think just, you know, not only being a smart fighter, but being a fun fighter, you don't have a lot of guys that are considered both. So I think that's what I'll be the most proud of.
Yeah, and I can definitely testify to that as well, having watched you fight in person several times in your career. Once again, this is Brandon Billiter with us on Forged in Ohio. You also have a lot of experience being a color commentator for Cage Thunder. I know you've mentioned it a few times. What interested you about getting into that side of the fight game, the media and the commentating side?
So I've always been, you know, I constantly watch, you know, not only the UFC, but I'm a fan of all sports. So I've just been constantly into sports media since I was young, constantly having SportsCenter on. My aunt always said that I'd grow up and be the next Joe Buck, is one of the things I remember from my childhood. But yeah, I've just always been interested in game planning and, you know, the X's and O's side of all sports. So that's something in MMA that I think is still kind of coming along. And I think, you know, someone that's had some experience but then can learn the broadcasting side of it, I think is going to be very valuable to the sport going forward. And so, you know, once I realized that, you know, I'm not going to make it to the UFC, you know, I can still make it to the UFC, you know, just be on the outside of that cage and hold that microphone. I think that's, you know, a very big goal.
Sure, and I think you're the perfect person to ask this question to, because I've heard a lot of fighters talk about fighting as an addiction or like a drug, that adrenaline rush that you feel. You almost feel that too when you put on the headset commentating a fight, right?
Yeah, it's a different kind of high for sure. You know, when I get in the cage, it's almost like a different version of me. I can kind of completely flip a switch and it's a more primal version of me. But yeah, putting that headset on and getting to talk fights, you're so locked in a very similar way. That, you know, you don't really, you kind of block everything else out and you're so focused and, you know, you want to deliver on that night. So it's definitely a certain adrenaline. It's not quite the same as fighting, but it's definitely a high.
Yeah, I know I asked you this question when it comes to fighting, but in terms of MMA commentary, you know, you have that dream of commentating for the UFC one day. Do you look up to any UFC broadcasters right now that you're like, yeah, I can draw that from how they call fights or how they analyze things, and you almost like the way that they deliver it and want to almost imitate what they do a little bit?
Sure. I think the best example would be Dominic Cruz. I think he's got obviously, he's got a very high fight IQ for years and years, you know, and he had success and was ahead of his time back then when he had the belt. And, you know, even still being able to compete today and adjust with the way that the sport has grown, I think he's a perfect example of somebody. And he just speaks really well. So I think he's the best example for the high level of MMA commentary.
Do you have a favorite fight that you've been on call for, whether it's because you're proud of how you did calling the fight or because the fight itself was just ridiculous?
That's a good question. I was really I was really kind of taken aback by how great the card was. Cage Thunder 27 that just delivered. I'm trying to think of a specific fight. That was the first time that there would been a third person doing the commentary with me and Alex. Chris Porter did a great job as well. I thought we found stuff off of each other really well. To pick a certain fight from that card, I'd probably say the Jamar Moore fight and Kobe Woodall. I think, you know, that fight went a little bit everywhere, and, you know, tactically, with it being southpaw orthodox, there's a lot of things to analyze and pick apart and kind of scope out as the fight was playing out, and I thought we did a good job of that. And they did a good job of delivering the fight.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because personally for me, I think my answer is the most recent Rex Heffel fight at Cage Thunder Next Gen Fight Series 1, because that fight also went the distance, and it was super complicated. Yeah. Their grappling exchanges, I was in awe sitting there on commentary, and I thought we did a good job, the three of us commentating that fight. So it's kind of interesting that both of our answers aren't necessarily a first-round knockout that was absolutely insane, but instead more of a technical masterclass that went to the distance. I think that's a pretty interesting comparison there. In terms of fighting itself, though, how involved are you still at Victory MMA? You mentioned how you were there putting in work with guys who were competing at Cage Thunder 26, but you're there. How often are you there, and how involved are you still at the gym?
So I took probably about 2 months off right after the fight. Didn't really think about training. I was actually in Florida just enjoying myself and, you know, kind of resetting my brain a little bit. And then when I came back, I was 2-3 times a week with these guys having fights coming up. I'll always be there for Luke anytime he competes. That's my guy. And then I actually have a friend of mine that I graduated high school with that's looking to make his MMA debut. He was a multi-time state placer in wrestling. I think he's got a very bright future. So I'm sure I'll be in the gym, you know, watching his growth, helping with his growth, and really excited to see where he goes with his career. So I'll be in the gym, not as much, you know, but I'll still be in there. You know, all those guys at Victory have my full support.
Yeah, so Luke McMurtry, he's been on Forge in Ohio 3 times. I've also had Devin Watkins on the show. James Dennis fought at Cage Thunder 26. But is there any young talent at Victory MMA that Ohio MMA fans should keep an eye on moving forward?
Yeah, so I think Adam McCann, he just made his debut, looked really good. And he's learning at a rapid pace. He didn't come from any sort of background, but his grappling is solid, his striking is coming along, and I don't think you've seen the last of him. Tommy fought over the summer. He's a 135er, and he's a solid kid as well, good southpaw, came from wrestled in high school with Devin Watkins, and he's rounding out his skill set tremendously. And then my friend Ben Higgins, he hasn't made his debut yet, but he is a monster on the ground, very physically strong, and he's got a very good head on his shoulders. I know he wants to take it far with the sport, and I think he will.
All right, well, I'm excited for that. Just a couple more for you, and perhaps the most important question I'll ask you. I think you might be my wife's favorite fighter because you're a Taylor Swift fan. How much of a Swiftie actually are you?
I'm a huge Taylor Swift fan. I'm really excited for the album next week. I always go to Target. You know, real Swift fans will get the hard copy, they'll go into Target and get the exclusive hard copy. So looking forward to that next week. And I couldn't end my MMA career without walking out to one of her songs. I was actually supposed to walk out to one of her songs. My debut fight is the same song I picked for my last fight. But they got a DJ who had never done it before, and he was just playing whatever he wanted. And I can't even remember what the song was, but it definitely wasn't Taylor Swift, and he was kind of all over the place. So. But yeah, big Taylor Swift.
What song again was it that you walked out to of hers?
Eyes Open from the Hunger Games soundtrack.
Eyes Open, I love it, man. So when you go to Target, because I know she's delivered so much Swiftie knowledge into my brain. When you go to Target and you get those that CD, are you somebody that gets all the different versions of the same CD with the different covers and all that stuff too?
The last album, Midnights, I got a vinyl, I got a CD, or actually got two vinyls, and I got a CD. I don't know if I'll go that crazy this time, but I'll most certainly get the CD. I'm I'm a CD guy. I've got all 10 of her albums on hard copy. So I'm looking forward to getting this one, and it'll be in my CD player for quite some time.
Were you able to make it to the Eras Tour?
Eras Tour was a little out of my price range. You know, we were focused on the fights, and, you know, fight camp can get expensive and things like that. But I did see her on the Reputation Tour. It was the best live show that I've seen out of all my artists. And people that have seen all my other walkouts know that, you know, my music choice is very wide and varied, and it's not the typical, you know, high energy fighter music, you know. So of all the other shows that I've seen in terms of live music, that was my favorite.
All right, there you have it, fight fans. Probably the first and maybe the only time Taylor Swift will be brought up on Forged in Ohio, but hopefully not the last. Before we wrap up, Brandon, anything you want to shout out here at the back end of the podcast?
Well, I want to shout out Cage Thunder for always taking care of me, taking care of all their fighters. I think Randy's done an excellent job in the last 5 years of really growing that company. They've done a tremendous job. Thank you to Scott for always matching the fights. And obviously, shout out to Victory, Coach Terry, Coach Drew, always putting in extra effort for their fighters. So I wouldn't be, you know, in this position where I am now, being able to have so much knowledge about the sport, talk about it from the outside looking in now. And, you know, I'm greatly indebted to them for getting me to where I am. So thank you to those guys.
All right. Well, thanks again, Brandon, for joining me on the show. I mentioned how it was long overdue for me to have you on the show, and I'm grateful that we were able to connect here for episode 72 of Forged in Ohio. I like to do the OHIO chant with my guests to get them out of here. So if you could help me out here, OHIO.
Thanks,
Brandon. Congrats on a great career. I'm looking forward to seeing more guys emerge from your gym, like you mentioned, and we'll talk again soon, whether it's at another event or on here again.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Jake.
That was Brandon Billiter, the 5-3 amateur mixed martial artist. I have a ton of respect for Brandon and his gym, Victory MMA. I've watched Brandon fight in person several times, and it was an honor to be on call for his last fight at Cage Thunder 25. The strong month of April continues for Forge in Ohio with episode 72, and believe me when I say I have some exciting fighters in line for the rest of the month. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram and Facebook at Forge in Ohio for episode announcements, highlights, and a whole lot more. And to support the show even further, you can download episodes wherever you listen to them or hit the subscribe button on YouTube, which costs you absolutely nothing. Thank you all for watching or tuning into this one. I've been your host, Jake Murren, and this was Forged in Ohio.